Welcome once again to the Futile Podcast. We have moved. Our website is now We are going to talk about a film that I actually worked on as a production assistant, and so much more. Now, I don't know what that really means. It was an independent film with a small budget, a modest budget. That doesn't mean that it was like $3 million. The budget was like, I think, $600,000. It was called it is called Humboldt County. And, we just watched a screening, a private special screening for local residents of Humboldt by the directors and the producer. And, well, let's do a review of it. So, Zach, you got no real experience in this. I probably should almost abstain from a review, being that I'm so closely connected to the project.
Right.
But I can still sort of add, you know, obvious things I think I can point out. So, what did you think?
I'm going to go pour myself a shot of something before.
I guess it'd be rated R.
It's rated R.
Yeah, because of the swearing.
The swearing and the continual drug use.
Yeah.
They rate that stuff.
In front of children.
In front of children, yeah.
And with children, almost. With the implication of children.
There were children everywhere in the audience, too.
Yeah, that's true.
The child in front of me was retarded.
Are you sure?
Oh, he was going like this the whole time.
Maybe he was just like had his iPod on and he was rocking out to something
else. Retarded. Or autistic, I guess the word would be.
The film is self-described by the directors as a coming of age sort of story, I guess.
It is pretty much a coming of age movie. Coming.
Yeah.
Of age. Okay. Now, let's give the caveat that you worked on this.
That's right. Yeah, I worked as a production assistant on this, so I probably shouldn't have much in the way of a review for it.
Give it. Because of some interest, what do you call that? Something of interest.
Conflicting interests.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an interesting. It was a valuable experience being a production assistant on a major movie that was certainly trying to reach outside of its financial bounds. A lot of trips to Staples. A lot of.
Friend of mine works there now. You should have told me.
That were going all over the place.
How long ago was this filmed, by the way?
Almost 2 years ago.
No way.
It was in September, late September and early October 2006.
Wow. I was talking to Ryan earlier about it, and he said that he'd never even heard of the movie. And he was living in Florida
mm-hmm.
when it was being, but it was a big deal up here when it was happening.
Well, yeah,
just like in the Majestic War.
Yeah, it was a much smaller scale, yeah. And it was off the grid. It wasn't really trying to feature a town particularly. It was supposed to just sort of be really in the woods, and that was
well. It had
fun
such huge
from a production
stars
standpoint
in it, as Peter Bogdanovich, Frusabalk, and
Francis Conroy and Brad Dourif.
Brad Dourif, yeah. You know Brad Dourif, right? He played Wormtongue in the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
he was in it.
At lunch, he was
cool beard,
telling a bunch of people that they use computers to do a lot of that.
He said that,
yeah.
To do a lot of what?
To
exactly?
do a lot of stuff in Two Towers.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
That's what one of the sound guys was saying too. As in the you know,
they did computers to do a lot of the stuff.
They used computers, yeah.
So the movie's about this guy who's in L.A. and he's a medical student
about to be graduated.
And assuming he went through pre-med, right?
Well,
so
yeah.
He had the same sort of training you had.
I am more. Yeah.
And he then, on a whim, not really on a whim, in a fit of depression, goes and bangs Frusabalk. And then she says, you want to go on a drive? And he's like, yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she, while he's sleeping, she drives him up to Humboldt County.
Which is like a 14-hour drive from LA.
No, it's 11.
Okay, 11.
Let's say it's 11. At the quickest, it's 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets up here, because we're in Humboldt County.
Yeah, we're in Humboldt County. This is here. We're in northern Humboldt County, which is, I would say, dramatically different than southern Humboldt County, which is what
this movie is actually talking about.
This
place is actually civilized compared to...
Yeah, southern Humboldt is the off-the-grid lost coast is part of where they're supposed to be, where people...
They filmed much of it, really. Like, it was the weirdest thing. was that as soon as I saw when they pulled up to the school that mm-hmm. the girl, I was like, that's North Coast Bible Camp. Because I went there.
Yeah, it's a Bible camp out of Elk River.
It was. And then at the end of the credits, it said thank you to North Coast Bible Camp.
Yeah.
And then every single
time. Did you clap when you noticed the
like
place?
Everyone else?
Yeah.
Every single time, any single place that is at all recognizable up here came up. Every person in the 500-person audience was like, "Whee! Yeah!" And then, like, the lager bar. Uh-huh. And every single place. Anytime there was, like, a branch of a tree that hung into the frame, they're like, "Yeah!
Tree!"
It was awful.
They all sounded like Dr. Roxo, too. When they
yeah.
did it.
I do cocaine.
Oh, we got to talk about that, but later.
Was there a new one last week? I totally missed it. I was working.
The two-parter?
I missed it.
The two-parter is called Snakes and Barrels 2.
Go to hell.
Did you TiVo it?
No, I missed it.
Oh my god, you
I
missed
was working.
You missed it?
I missed it.
And you didn't oh my god.
I didn't
gosh.
TiVo it.
Oh man, well you can probably watch it online. I think you can watch it online. All I'll tell you, oh my gosh. They did stuff in that it just seems so wrong. Like I'm watching it and I'm laughing and I'm like, I don't think I should even be laughing. Like if people like knew this was on TV, it would be bad. It's like totally an indictment against like the recovery culture, because it's all about how Snakes and Barrels is like in recovery with this guy named Nikki Kicks, mm-hmm. and it's all about he runs the Kicks Institute for like kicking drugs.
Yeah.
And
Nikki Kicks.
And Roxo's in it, right. And all recovered, and he's like the one that announces, like brings on the band to play right. at this like sober fest, mm-hmm. you know, this like straight edge kind of thing.
Does Roxo
and
been on cocaine?
It's so, oh my gosh. It basically, that show needs to be written by, it needs to be written as in half hours, because it's obvious how many times have you seen an episode where like they're not even done with the story when they're running the credits.
They end it really quick. A lot of times they'll just kill something like right before it.
Well, because it's like, I think from writing home movies, he's like, he wants to tell a story that takes place in half an hour or 22 instead of 11. He's got more going on, obviously. Okay, so that was the little
so this guy, Peter, is, he goes up to Humboldt County. There he meets...
The main character, the medical student, Peter, ends up in off-the-grid Humboldt County, out in mm-hmm. the woods.
And his father is Peter Bogdanovich.
His father is played by the actor and director, Peter Bogdanovich.
You guys wanna, who's a movie? I have Miss Congeniality.
Classic film guy.
And
he wakes up and immediately wants to go home because he is freaked out that he's there with these pot dealers.
This isn't gonna work right now. So they meet... Peter meets a guy named Max the Truman.
Right.
And he's sort of he's kind of surly, I guess.
A little bit surly.
He's got a daughter named Charity. Mm-hmm. She's the obligatory precocious young child.
She's precocious.
You know, she talks about books that she shouldn't know about and, you know, knows all about sex and things like that. And then... he's kind of just lives with them for a while and just kind of calms down and takes a couple days off from being so stressed about being flunked out of medical school because he was flunking one class because he wasn't paying attention to like the emotional needs. I guess that seems to be the big thing, is that he's not very into his some woman would probably say he's got a low emotional IQ.
Right.
Where is he?
They're outside. And
hey. Chris Messina was in Maid of Honor.
That's not too bad. Chris Messina plays the surly pot grower.
6 Feet Under, he was in a bunch of. Law and Order, he was in a bunch of. Look at that.
Okay.
What is all this?
So, eventually, the feds show up.
Right.
And things happen.
He learns, you know, to loosen up by smoking pot.
Yeah.
And then
that was one of the few times I think that they kind of had like they got the sun just right
and
the lighting
luck.
And that definitely I mean
because they really did like turn brighter right after he'd smoked it and I bet they were like oh my gosh that's awesome while
they
were watching it
they definitely kind of well they might have had like a gel blocking the section he was in and then pulled it or something but they made that work
it was like the light shine like
and that looked great and that got like the biggest applause I think
well that was because everyone was so excited the first time he even tried his pot
And the ball stars try.
Yeah, it was like.
That's the one thing I've noticed about Thoughts and Wonders is that they're more excited
for other people.
That other people start because they want someone to do it with. Uh-huh. Like, that's the main thing for anyone. Yeah, it's like, pretty much all drugs and smoking and drinking and anything is like a social thing. Like, mm-hmm. if you get someone else to do it with you, you're like, yeah.
Totally.
Like, things still start going wrong in these other people's world, mainly because of the feds.
Yeah.
And he turns out to be a more loyal person than. Everyone thought he was going to be because he's with the Max guy, and
he never tells
when people ask him how many plants he has, because he finds out that Max has hundreds of plants. Yeah. He's got a gigantic grow operation,
enough to get himself in real trouble.
Yeah, but he's trying to do it for. He was the only guy with any sort of real motive. Like you said, he was the only character who really had any sort of action to his to anything he did. And then also, he's the only person who had any sort of motivation, which was he was doing something ostensibly bad, but his purpose for doing this was because he was trying to get his daughter out of the lifestyle that he was living.
Yeah, he didn't want to be in the romanticized, off-the-grid, like, that's all you can do is, you know, grow weed and that's whatever, you
right.
know.
Kind of thing. And he wasn't, like, a jerk about it, though. He was firmly ensconced in the world. He was a user, and he seemed very laid back with anyone else doing whatever they wanted to do. But at the same time, he didn't ever seem to freak out about his daughter doing anything, either.
No.
But he was concerned that she would grow up having lived the same life as him.
Yeah. And they made that point kind of when they're sort of dramatic bit at the end there.
And so then the Peter character kind of, you know, helps him out with that. And
I heard a pretty sweet thing.
It's got, I don't know. I mean, how would you describe the tone of the film? It was kind of a dramedy type thing.
It was trying to be sort of 70s quirky. That's why it has the title sequence the way it does, with like the date in,
right.
in it. And that, I had heard in interviews with them that's sort of their. I mean, a lot of people, I think, that it are of that era kind of like the 70s sense. It sort of. So
it had Bogdanovich.
A lot more. Yeah, I did.
He's purely 70s.
It's got a lot more. It's more of a character study type sort of thing, and stuff just sort of happens. And I mean, you know, it's kind of like.
So without giving away the end of the plot, that's basically the plot of the thing.
Yeah.
And he was freaking out about getting back, and then the longer he's there, the less he cares. He just kind of gets lost in this world of the the nice views and the...
It's just a summer vacation.
Yeah, it turns into a summer vacation for him from his real life. It's what about Bob's vacation from himself, basically.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the actual, you know, what's your actual feeling about the film now that we've gotten the plot?
You have to hit both of those. I'm sorry, but there's kind of no way.
Toka and Rezar?
No, exactly. I mean, it'd be like a different experience. So one's like an engine room, one's all clean, you know? Yeah, definitely both.
Anara's a four.
Yeah, I know.
Are you guys talking about Firefly?
Yeah, they are.
I you know what? I would honestly do Kaylee first. I would pick Kaylee first, I think. And then any girl in the entire universe over Zoe.
Yeah.
Dude, you know who I'd first do is Malcolm Reynolds' whore wife.
The redhead? Yeah, I was
going to
ask about her.
Dude,
the big tit one, dude.
She's in Mad Men.
Mad Men, yeah.
She's got big boobies.
She's got huge hooters, man.
That's the way to go.
She's really hot.
She's got big boobies.
She's got a fat ass.
Yeah.
She's got fat everything, except for her face.
That's great.
Except for faced and waist. Faced. Her face.
I bet she's a very good person.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a nice value judgment there.
I'd rather fuck River than her.
Seriously.
River's gross. Actually, I'd rather do Zoe than River, probably.
What? No, dude, River looked good in the movie.
Oh, she's gross. She looks disgusting, dude. What? She looks like Steve Buscemi. What?
She does have kind of a gout.
Or the captain.
Ball.
Huh?
The captain. Simon
or the captain?
Simon's more girlish looking, but the captain would be able to hold me in those strong arms all night, I think.
I think he'd just fuck the shit out of you.
And then he'd be like, get off my bunk, you scoundrel.
Scallywag.
You scallywag. Walk the plank, you.
Yeah, so,
He'd make you suck his plank.
Oh, my gosh.
Is that like his sock?
Don't get splinters.
Don't get splinters on my plank,
don't
bitch.
Touch the sides.
Oh, my gosh. Right.
Okay, so, I'd say that it, there's definitely, I think it's hard to judge it like the way it looked because the venue was just not a good venue.
The venue was the sound, the Eureka Theater.
I don't think their sound design is as bad as that venue was portraying it. It was like a mono projected from like a speaker way at the very end.
There was some visual issues too. They had the guy
was ghosting.
The guy was also at a few points lost focus and then like fought to get it back and then finally did after a minute.
And there were, it was ghosting.
Yeah, it was ghosting for a lot. Yeah, yeah, so anytime there was.
But there were certain scenes in it where, like, at the beach, where like Peter was in focus and Chris was not. Right. You know, Max was not.
Peter, Chris.
And I'm like, but then when I saw the credits, it looked like actually like the left side was out of focus like that. Maybe that was a projection.
That might have been. That might have been a progression.
And that's
thing.
Weird.
Because I thought their rack focus was really weak for the most part. If that wasn't the case, but the main problems with the visuals I think was we discussed in the second half.
Yeah.
There's a huge problem with framing and composition with people's faces.
Yeah.
One of the first things you learn in any sort of directorial class or any sort of film theory class, period, is that like if they ever go through a chapter on composition of the frame and mise-en-scène and all that.
Mise-en-scène.
You got faces, and you generally, they've done studies that show that the human eye looks at certain parts of the screen more often, and they're generally, so you want to put the focal point of faces, which
the rule
is eyes.
Of thirds and the golden ratio and all that stuff.
And the eyes go in a certain part of the screen, and they completely ignored that in the second half. And I say they, assuming the filmmakers had something to do with it besides the DP, but it sounds like the cinematographer had a lot to do with the look, and that these guys probably didn't have as much, and it was their first time thing, but like I was saying, even first time people should know that rule. Like, it's simple enough to get those things right. They didn't have any problems like with the 180 rule or anything.
No,
like there wasn't any sort of like staging problems or anything. The only real problems was with the composition type.
Yeah, and there was some editing things where things got really kind of choppy and quick, and they were probably just trying to cover up.
I didn't notice too much in the editing part.
Well, I think for the action sequence at the end when the feds are raiding the stash, it's really really choppy, and maybe that's because I know how they shot it and stuff. But it just seems like it kind of it's too choppy. Mm-hmm. As far as I can tell,
it looked, you know, it looked and felt like a student film. It felt a little better than that, just because I think that you shoot someone 35 and you kind of have already surpassed the student film level of look, no matter how it's like cut or anything.
Yeah,
but it really did have the feel of a student film still. And I think that, you know,
well, the kind
of
story, it was sort of aimless.
There's moments where there's long drawn out monologues by people describing problems or things happened in the past. It's the old tell and don't show type things for past catching up to a character's past, and they do it with this old woman and with Brad Dourif's character where there's it seemed like kind of bad acting moments and like the old George Lucas thing they always say is if you see bad acting in a George Lucas movie, it's not the actor's fault, it's Lucas's fault, you know.
Yeah.
If a director can't direct actors, then it'll show on screen. And I think they did a good job for the most part, but they also had pretty good pro actors on the film. Those are guys who probably could just act if you told them that, you know, just, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, read the script and do what you want with it. And Bogdanovich probably doesn't take direction very, not very begrudgingly. I'm assuming he might have helped him, I don't know. It probably would have been cool to work with someone like that who's directed, you know, he's directed something like 30 movies or something like that. So, and then Brad Dourif's old bro and everything.
Yeah.
I wonder if they bugged him about his voice acting. I wonder if they talked about that the whole time.
About Chucky?
Yeah.
I don't think that
they
did.
Three of them.
I think they wanted to know what was going on with baseball games a lot of the time.
Yeah. Sounds like my kind
of Cincinnati Reds.
I thought you said they're from St. Louis.
Oh, I don't know what team they picked then.
Well, the Cardinals?
Yeah, the Cardinals. That was what it was. I get them confused because they both have red and birds or something like that, right?
You could probably, like,
so
give me a
vagina. I think that it was, you know what, and actually another movie that was filmed up here, Majestic, bored me more than this did. That was a more boring movie. It was better made because it was all pros, but Darabont Kent, you know, is not a poor filmmaker in any way. It just was not an interesting story. This one was, it's not, I don't think it's supposed to be taken as some sort of exciting story with any sort of like real crux to any action. It really is a character study, but it doesn't delve too deep in any character.
It's
really kind of a lightweight indie, you know, the interesting thing about it is the area and Humboldt County, and like Humboldt County is a character in it now.
Off the grid.
Yeah, off the grid, and makes
everyone smokes weed.
Someone gets in there, they start acting like the area.
Yeah.
Some people bemoan it, other people don't. And everyone's kind of a stereotype of crazy. I don't know. It was interesting. It was interesting to see
an outsider take on. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, if I was from somewhere else watching it about here, I probably wouldn't care about it at all. I wouldn't have found it very interesting at all, I don't think. If this was a movie about someplace in Georgia, I would have been bored to tears, I think.
Yes.
Hmm.
But I probably would have said the same about Majestic, but I didn't know if it was filmed up here. So.
Yeah.
So it's just that type of thing to me.
So the novelty of it being yeah. in an area that you even... spent some portion of your time.
Yeah. So what would you say about this? Great Glass.
I think you got it pretty accurately. It's yeah. I think that they're just honestly. I think there's just problems with the with the way it looks, right? And it's so hard because I can't tell how much of that was the projection. Right. I really would have preferred to see it. At a better venue, I couldn't hear half the dialogue right. because it was just a mono speaker at the very bottom of the thing. Kind of.
It'll
kind
be
of
interesting
echoing.
To see it when they play it up here. I don't know if I'll want to pay for it again, but maybe I'll go see a matinee or something.
Yeah,
I didn't pay this time. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I got a ticket.
But I don't know if I want to pay for it. Period is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So maybe a matinee or when it plays at the movies or something when it goes down to $3.
Yeah, if it gets that kind of wide release. Well, they're working on another one that's about some guy walking around in New York. Like, he walks through the city of New York in a day or something. And that actually sounds like it could be kind of an interesting story.
That's the plot?
I think so.
What's his purpose?
I don't know what his... I don't remember what his purpose of is. I don't think it's, like, as pretentious as, like, Waking Life. He just can walk it. I mean, it'll probably have something like that to it. But who knows?
I give it a C.
Okay, that sounds about right. That's what I would give it. Given
What would you give the guy in front of you?
The guy in front of me who was like, I'm going to kick the chair in front of me a whole bunch. Like, I did that
on
purpose.
No, he said, here's exactly what he said. I haven't kicked the chair in front of me all night. And then there was a pregnant pause. Like, he was expecting you to say, well, I've kicked yours repeatedly.
I don't think that's what he was expecting. I think I bumped it with my knee twice, and then he immediately turned right around like that was the thing to do. And I'm like, are you 6'2"? That's probably what I should have just said.
Yeah.
And then he probably stood up and going, yeah.
No, I think he was about 5'7".
5'7".
He was about Tom Cruise.
So he has a short
man
complex.
He had a retarded
complex,
son. So.
And a retarded son that he had to deal with.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy, that fucko. As soon as he left, like right as he was leaving, I put my foot right up on his chair.
You did?
I did.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like, you think I did that on purpose? Jerk off? They don't make chairs
bigger. Some
people
just
like
kind
this.
Of have no patience or anything.
Yeah, well, whatever. Maybe I had bumped it twice before that.
He could have at least been nice about it. Maybe if he had been nice about it.
You know what? I responded by apologizing and then apologizing a second time very sincerely.
When you apologized the second time, I was like, does that mean Matt apologized the first time? Because why would he be apologizing again? Because I thought maybe Matt had apologized.
I wanted to make it abundantly clear to him that he had been a dick. That's why I did it the second time. And it did. It absolutely
you
did.
You assumed that it did.
Of course, because he did this. He went like, yeah, okay. Not a big deal. He realized, you know, at least he realized that.
Maybe he was just being a dick back by doing this. Maybe
he was, but it was one of those like, yeah, get away from me. I know. Leave me alone. I know, guys.
Zach,
okay.
What?
I'm gonna kill this. I stand firm for our soil. Look a rock on photos and they juicy. Trust me, I'll be stitchy. Hell is round the corner where I shelter. Is something a schism? The living out of style. If you believe or deceive. Margaret Thatcher or Margaret Cho? Thatcher would be more appreciative.
And Cho would be fatter.
And lesbianish. And she just wouldn't appreciate it.